White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 364.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm enjoying a rare win, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we won a football game.
Winning is good.
Yes.
Better than losing.
Better than the alternative, right. One of the things I do want us to talk about tonight, besides the game specifically, and of course looking ahead to Georgia and all of that, is, you know, I was just looking to see if I put the new sound. I have two new sound effects, but I don't think I put one of them on the soundboard. Well, that doesn't do a whole lot of good. Dang it. Well, I'll drop it in later in post, because this is not Liberty Hate Week. I'm sorry. This is not
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
You know, I have a brand new super sound effect. People may not realize that don't listen all the way. People that don't listen all the way to the very end, and I would think that by now all of our listeners know, not every week, but a lot of weeks I do tack things on at the end, you know. And we have the new Liberty Hate Week 2018 sound effect. But I thought I had it on my soundboard, and I don't. I have the other one that was requested on there now, and I'll use it at the appropriate time. But the thing I wanted to talk about, though, was this was something I mentioned on Twitter on Saturday night, and it was very, very popular. It got lots of likes and retweets and so forth. And that must mean it's true. Well, that means a lot of people seem to agree with it. And that was that I was saying, let me explain where it came from. And we are going to go into the game, obviously, in just a second. But I just want to throw this out here up front in our usual little sort of general topic, you know, discussion period here. And I want to get your take on it. Is it seemed to me like, you know, for the last several weeks, obviously, really ever since the LSU game, Auburn Twitter has largely been dominated, not entirely, but largely been dominated by all the anti-Gus, this sucks, blah, blah, negative, negative, say bad things about the team and the coaches, mostly the coaches crowd. And that's understandable. That's understandable. I don't have an issue with that, really. But what really annoyed me on Saturday night was not that people are saying, hey, we won. That was awesome. What a great comeback win. Way to go, guys. Good job by the players. Hey, the coaches maybe even kind of halfway knew what they were doing. No, that wasn't what we were getting. The other side, it almost turned into the – I think what really repulsed me about it all is it's starting to sound so much the way that we all talk about politics now. I just don't need another thing that sounds like politics, you know? That's bad enough. I don't need two things that we're doing that, you know? And what I mean by that is when the two sides decide they're on opposite sides, they're opposed to each other on everything, even though they're really all on the same team, like in the politics thing, we're all Americans, and in the Auburn thing, we're all Auburn fans, apparently, supposedly, right? And yet, so we're the same in a way, and yet we draw up our teams, we draw up our partisanship, we put on our jerseys. In this case, we're all supposed to be wearing blue jerseys, John, and we put on our pro-Gus, anti-Gus, you know, jerseys. And the ones that are pro-Gus, they're the ones I've always been, you know, a little more sympathetic to over the last few years, but they really tick me off because they're the ones that all came out of the woodwork on Saturday night with, not just with, you know, congratulations, hey, maybe we're right, maybe the coaches, no. It was this passive-aggressive, slimy, smarmy, you know, just trying to rub it in that we'd won, not for the sake of winning and for the sake of Auburn and for all that, but for more for the, I guess I was right after all, ha, kind of thing. And that just, it made me want to claw my eyeballs out, John. Am I making the least bit of sense, or do you know what I'm talking about?
I know 100% what you're talking about. And let me tell you, the other side made me want to claw my eyeballs out, because there were people who said, man, I'm really unhappy Auburn won that game because I wanted an excuse to fire Gus.
Bingo. Yep. Yep. They both.
And I got nothing for that.
No. No. No, 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 never, never.
The core thing of what you said is we're Auburn fans.
Yes.
It's college football. You have to. We can't get into this thing like you were talking about. The politics is a good way to describe it, because it's where I need my idea to triumph.
Yes,
and at any cost.
Yes,
and I'm fine with whatever happens to get me there. And
that's
I can't say like maybe I step back again and say maybe I was wrong or my idea isn't going to triumph. But it's okay because Auburn wins.
I mean, I'll burn the country down as long as my idea prevails at the end. And it's never going to happen. I mean, I said this before. If we fired Gus as coach tomorrow and hired some other person, half the Auburn people within a year are going to say, oh, he's even worse. You should have never fired Gus or get somebody else. I mean, you're never going to have 100% unless, you know, Nick Saban type cosmic fantasy situation.
But that isn't going to happen. So if that's your expectation, then you're never, ever, 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 ever going to be happy with Auburn football, period.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. No, you absolutely nailed it there with the, All right. Well, that's that.
But
I don't want to dwell on it.
You make a really good point, and we need to emphasize it, that this is college football. It's supposed to be fun, and the end result that we want is Auburn winning. That's it.
Yes.
That's what we want.
And for crying out loud, be happy about it. I mean, people are like, well, I can't be happy about this because this shouldn't be a big win. I'm like, well, number one, beating an SEC West team at home is just by definition, I don't care if we're 0-8 right now. I don't care what our record was going into that game. Number one, we beat an SEC West team and held our home field. And number two, we'd never done that before. We'd never beaten Texas A&M at home before. I mean, certainly not in the modern era, maybe back in the 20s or something, but we'd never beaten them before at home.
That whole that's not worth celebrating thing, I have a real hard time with that too.
Yes.
Like, okay, they were ranked in the playoff rankings. They were. That team that we beat on Saturday was in the top 25 in the playoff rankings. Like, so the only things that are worth celebrating is if you, at the end of the year, you win the national title, then you're allowed to have a party. Again,
that's ridiculous.
You're going to have a very unhappy life then. Like, every time that we win a football game, I don't care if, when Liberty Hate Week rolls around and we beat them, I'm going to be happy
when we win
that game.
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
I had it. I found it. Oh, I'm planning on wearing that one out. I worked really hard on that for how silly it is. I plan to wear that out.
All right, we're all delighted, man.
Yes.
But when Liberty Hate Week rolls around and we ring that gong and beat them, I'm going to be happy.
Yes,
okay? Even though they're a bad 1A team, whatever, I'm going to be happy that Auburn won a football game. And so,
Hate Week 2018.
You said it again. I'm sorry. I can't play it enough.
I'm not going to say it again.
It's not even that week. I don't care. I'm going to have 2 weeks of it.
If you can't have joy in beating Texas A&M at home, something we've never done, the Auburn fans in that stadium have never seen a win over Texas A&M.
That's right.
And the fact that we freaking stiffed and made a fool of Jimbo Fisher on national television, if you can't enjoy that, then you need to really – and because you're so invested in the anti-Gus thing or the pro-Gus thing, then you need to step back from that stuff. You really do.
Can I just point out that Kevin Sumlin is undefeated in Jordan-Hare and Jimbo Fisher is now 0-1 at Texas A&M at Auburn? I love it. I love it. I'm just so glad it wasn't Sumlin that it was Jimbo. Because if you beat Sumlin, okay, fine. Because we beat him every other year. But to beat Jimbo, we beat Jimbo. And that just makes me happy.
I want to stick it to Jimbo. I want to beat him every single year and make them question the contract they gave him. That's how I feel.
And you know who's on his staff there, too, that we've been kind of mad at lately is Damian.
Oh, yeah.
Damian was right there next to him. I hate it. I hate it for Damian. I hate it for the Damian in my memory that I love and is one of my favorite players of all time. But Damian, the coach, just kind of ticks me off. So, frankly, I don't have any sympathy for him. Damian, the player in the 1990s, I will always love forever. So great, so great, so great. Damian, the coach, yeah, you can have him. So that was good. That was very good. Was a big comeback.
Not something we're used to seeing. Like, hasn't been a lot of comebacks recently.
No.
And not, like, multi-score comebacks.
Well, that's what I was also saying on Saturday night, was that this reminded me of some of those Pat Dye years. I mean, this is the thing, all right? We look back now and we think of the Pat Dye years as if we were just a monster, a behemoth every year. We act like every year was 83, 88, you know what I mean? But but in Pat Dye's tenure, in addition, there were also 81, 91, 92 years that we won five games three different times, which I just point that out. But also, and I think in some ways these were my favorite Pat Dye years, they were those years like 82, 86 to a degree, where we 84, where we had these huge comeback wins with teams that weren't monsters like that exactly. But they gutted it out. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, you know, the famous 84 Florida State game where we were our backs to the wall, our feet to the fire, or the some couple of the games in 82, like the Iron Bowl in 82 where we fought and scratched and clawed back at the end. I mean, Pat Dye had a bunch of wins where we didn't just steamroll somebody. We had to fight and claw and come roaring back at the end, and then play that great defense on the last possession. You know, I mean, how many Pat Dye wins can you remember, just in general, where Dye is out there yelling at the defense on the last drive before the clock hits zero? So many, right?
Yeah,
so many,
and they came through most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Rushing three, just like we were at the end. I remember him yelling, "Rush three, rush three." And I'm thinking, "Rush three." Yeah, we were watching a couple of highlights Sunday morning, and I was showing my wife. I'm like, "Look, on the screen right now, you see three Auburn players." That was hilarious. If you go back and watch, like, the highlights or watch the very end of the game, the last couple of plays A&M ran, they have a pretty wide-angle view of the field, and you will see three Auburn players on the entire field. I guess they were all just standing on the goal line.
They were?
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
It was wonderful to have a big comeback. I think the team itself, the players, showed a lot of character and a lot of, like, there was a lot of stuff. I need to say this. There was a lot of stuff early in the season about the locker room and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, again, was symptoms of the team not winning. Coming out, because it magnifies all that stuff.
Not the other way around.
Right. But this, never for a minute has this team stopped trying.
No.
And you could see that 100% on Saturday. They never gave up in that game. And Brian Davis, you know, after the game, was talking about how he felt like they just needed, like, one little spark and they were going to do it. He really felt like they had a chance, and he was right.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Now, what certainly our players did their part. How much responsibility for that outcome goes on Jimbo?
He deserves some, for sure. I mean, throwing the ball when they were ahead.
Yeah.
And basically saving us time and timeouts was really stupid. He should have gotten.
I felt like they could run the ball on us all day, and I didn't understand why they didn't just run the ball more.
That's right. And I think I think if he could do it over again, he would 100% be running the ball with Trevion Williams and Kellen Mond at the end of the game and not throw any of those passes. I think it was dumb.
Right.
And I think he got a little, you know, cute and overconfident. Mm-hmm. And they should have been running the ball.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that we couldn't stop their run very well.
And no, they killed us with it.
And they kept us in the game by not doing that.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Until we were able to get our offense under our feet finally with like 6 minutes to go. But speaking of our offense, we entered that game ninth in the SEC in total rushing offense. We came out of it 11th. We got, let me get the numbers up here, but we had 19 yards rushing net. In fact, we had 15 on the out of the running backs from what I can tell, including the quarterback. We had 15 yards net. That's long. I'm sorry. Yeah, 19 yards. Whitlow had 16. Shivers had 11. That's when you throw in Stidham's minus 15. But even then, I mean, even if you take away that minus 15 for Stidham, Malik Miller, 2 carries for 2 yards. Schwartz, 3 carries for 4 yards. I mean, he was not getting it done with the – they were not the – The Schwartz sweep was not getting it done, even though we found out last this season that.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Right. And yet it apparently wasn't a big enough Schwartz this week to get it done. You know who actually looked pretty good was Shivers. Only gave him 2 carries. I mean, I realized the running game wasn't really working, but did you think we should have tried more or tried with different running backs or.
I think we should have tried with different running backs. I mean, I like Malik Miller, and he is incredibly effective on those little screen passes. That's his thing, clearly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he cannot line up and run the ball on an SEC defense. He just can't. And I think it was clear that Whitlow was not close to 100%. He clearly was not recovered from the Ole Miss game. He did not have the same explosiveness and acceleration and speed that he had in the Ole Miss game, and that combined with a good A&M rushing defense, when we were running him straight at them, led to real problems. And I think you're right. I would have given Shivers to the outside, I think, was something that could have worked if we had tried it some more. And so I would have liked to see a little more of that. But at the same time, like, the running game wasn't working. Like, and I think and there's a certain point of, like, you can keep pounding your head against it or you can start throwing the ball.
Right.
And once we got so far behind, we had to just go all in on throwing the ball. The offense was fine.
Well, right. And I'm not saying that I don't want that, I guess. I guess I'm just saying when I look at these numbers, it looks to me like the problem was a couple of our runners, not the entire rushing attack. I was happy we threw the ball every play because that's where our strength is. I'm just thinking that, you know, if Sean Shivers had 2 carries for 11 yards, that's 5.5 yards a carry. Maybe he should have gotten more than 2 carries.
And what I'm just saying is, like, at a certain point earlier in the game, we should have abandoned the run completely and gone more of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And interestingly, too, is who it was catching the ball, because in our down period this year, Slayton and Ryan Davis have been basically MIA. And in this game, Slayton had 8 catches for 107 yards, and Ryan Davis had 5 catches for 75 yards. That's more like what their numbers have to be. You know, they are our two. I know that, you know, that Seth Williams is very, and Schwartz are very important. And the screens to Miller and everything. But I feel like our offense is driven primarily by passing yards to Darius Slayton and Ryan Davis, just the way that we run that offense, right, which is chuck it down the field. You either throw it deep to Slayton or you throw it short to Davis and hope he goes deep.
But 80% of those yards for the two of them, or 90%, have to be in those last two drives.
Yes. Yeah, but that's when our offense is working, is when those two guys, when Slayton's catching the bombs and Davis is creating long plays. It's kind of funny. If you looked at their all-time stats, I bet that the ball in the air to Slayton is four times longer than the ball in the air to Davis, even if they have about the same number of total receiving yards.
I think you're right.
Yeah, because a lot of Davis is after the catch, and Slayton pretty much falls down when he catches. He's 40 yards downfield when he falls down. So let's see if there's anything else we want to talk about on the – I mean, you got to say the interception by Iggy, right? That was a big, big moment. Because at that point, I'd about given up, to be honest with you.
We were down two scores, and they were driving. It was huge. They missed a field goal. And then they were driving again, and Iggy got a huge interception. That was really the turning point in the game. Hmm. And then immediately, we forced the punt from them, and then we did the tricky punt return thing where we had Ryan Davis pretend to go catch it, but actually we had Tutt on the other side. He had a good run back, and those two things really kind of were the fuse that lit the spark that blew the whole thing up.
That is absolutely right, and I love that punt. But I noted that as good as Christian Tutt's punt return was, he was one guy away from taking it to the house.
It was the punter, and somebody missed the block on him too. They had a chance to block him and didn't get him.
And it worked out. It worked out. We can't complain. But I was just thinking, if Tutt had taken that one to the house, as he almost did, would we be hearing, everybody be complaining that it wasn't the offense, it was the – I'm kind of glad it wasn't the special teams. I'm kind of glad the offense did have to do it just to show that they could, to themselves even.
Yes. I think you're right. I think that's a good point.
Let's see. Seth Williams. I mean, I think at this point you just throw it in his direction and see what happens.
All right. I'm going to give you some receivers to young Seth Williams compared to young these players. Frank Sanders, Lawyer Tillman, Courtney Taylor, like who?
Mm-hmm. Even a couple of guys that Cam had to throw to, and was it Todd in 2009?
Mm-hmm. Not Darvin Adams.
No, he wasn't quite as tall.
I think he's bigger. He's a big physical guy.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, yeah, he catches it like Lawyer, kind of going up and coming down with it, with that vertical. But, yeah, I mean, I think those are all very very accurate comparisons, absolutely.
He clearly is so good at going up and getting the ball, using his hands, and he's got so much size, he's tough for guys to defend. And I think Stidham can put the ball in places where only – it's either Williams is going to catch it or it's going to be incomplete. You know what I'm saying? It's not like –
throw it totally over the head of the defense, and either Williams will get it or nobody. Yeah, that touchdown, that was no chance that was going to be intercepted. That was either completely overthrown – or it was a touchdown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we really have struggled in the red zone this year at converting for touchdowns, and we found one thing that we know is going to work down there. Now, I'm sure George is going to be all over him. They probably have two guys covering him when he gets to the 10-yard line, but he's a weapon.
Yeah. Now, what about our offense? Whoa, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I had a little technical glitch. What about the offense the rest of the game? I mean, what were they trying to do, and what can we take from that before they just suddenly started blowing doors the last two drives?
Well, we came out and we ran two sweeps to Schwartz, which is not easy to say.
The Schwartz sweep.
Yes.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
That was a special request from one of our listeners, so repeatedly.
I And those didn't work, but I think it wasn't because of him. It was because A&M was really ready for that. Schwartz is a receiver, too. He doesn't have to be Eli Stove 2.0.
You're right.
We can throw him the ball down the field.
Yeah.
Like, he's a super fast guy. Send him straight ahead down the field and have Stidham chuck the ball sometime.
Isn't it funny how when these guys end up in the sweep role, they kind of quit using them as receivers? What the heck was that?
It's a very pigeonholed kind of thing in this offense. We need to throw the ball to Schwartz. Like, he's a guy that needs to get the ball in his hand multiple ways. So,
yeah.
But we didn't do that. Where the running game was really bad. Terrible, not just bad. We got in a lot of third and longs. We did a lot of the stuff where, you know, we slowed down. We substituted a lot. And that wasn't very effective. Like, we, you know, we're doing that micromanage the offense thing, and it wasn't being effective.
Right.
And, you know, trying to manufacture stuff by getting the exact right matchup on the field. But, you know, A&M, I told you before, I really like their defensive coordinator. I thought they had a good plan. And I think, you know, one of the things we did late in the game is we kept extra guys in to block. And when we had only five guys in to block for Stidham, they were all over him. And that was kind of the first, you know, two-thirds of the game. Anytime he tried to pass, we only had just the offensive line protecting. They basically got pressure on him, and bad results happened.
Yeah.
But later in the game, we kept him, you know, a running back or a extra tight end and a running back or something. And he had time, and that's when plays happened. So I think that's one of those things of, like, we need to, you know, do the same kind of thing that LSU did to us and keep some extra protection in to give him a chance to be successful.
Exactly. He can be very accurate if you just give him a second. He just hadn't had a second all year.
That's right.
So, what is the deal with our run defense? It seems like Mississippi State and Texas A&M both just totally exposed and exploited us right up the middle.
Some of it is that, and when we used to do this to teams with Cam and Nick, is the difference between teams with running quarterbacks and teams without. I mean, teams that don't have running quarterbacks are easier to defend the run against. And teams that had running quarterbacks, you have to worry about them and account for them, and it's harder. Mm-hmm. I would also say, like, I think Travion Williams is really good.
Yeah.
On the list of players who have tormented Auburn the last few years, he's at the top for me, maybe, among opposing SEC players. I am so freaking glad he is gone because he's killed us. Mm-hmm. But no, I think the run defense has kind of gotten worse over the course of the season. It's a concern. I think we got to tighten up a lot this week if we're going to, you know, have any chance against Georgia. I think they can. Because again, at Georgia, Fromm isn't going to run the ball, so the way you defend the run gets easier then.
Yeah. What about the officiating? You had a note about that.
I just thought the officiating was, it's a general rule, terrible in this game. I thought there was, and we were talking about the run defense. I thought there was a number of holding calls that were not called against Auburn's defensive line. I thought they were holding us a lot. Mm. I thought the pass interference call on Denson in the end zone was the single worst call I've seen in an SEC game this year. He literally did not touch the guy with either hand, and they called pass interference in the end zone on him. And that was and that led to Texas A&M getting a first and goal and scoring. So that was a huge penalty that, you know, basically gave Texas A&M a play when they didn't deserve it.
Am I crazy or does
And then that
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Am I crazy or does it seem like referees call holding a lot less than they used to and pass interference a lot more than they used to?
Maybe. I mean, I think there's more passing now I think defensive players are trying to get any kind of advantage they can by, you know, bumping and slapping and stuff. There's hand fighting on every pass and every play, yeah, on every route. So if you wanted to be a real stickler, you could throw a flag every play.
Yeah.
until the defender stopped doing that, and then you'd never stop a pass again. So, but I think the difference is like it's real inconsistent when and how they call it. I think that's an issue. And then you saw the one official in this game called that one play for Auburn a touchdown, and the guy went out at like the 1.5 yard line. I thought that was a terrible call too. Like, I have no idea what he was even seeing in that play. So
right, no, I agree. All right, let's. I guess it's time to talk a little bit about these guys.
Oh my God!
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
So it's doggy week. It's doggy
week.
They'll
be here any minute.
Oh, yep, they will. They'll be here any minute, John. We better talk. I always forget that little bit's on at the end. I usually turn it off. So we got it's the Georgia Bulldogs. It's the Deep South's oldest rivalry. It's one that we dominated for a while, and it was one that was all the way, kind of like A&M for a while. And lately, it's been a little more tilted toward Georgia. So. But you make a good point here that we need to remember what about Georgia, John?
We hate Georgia.
Yes, we do.
We get wrapped up about the Saban stuff all the time. We got to remember this. We hate Georgia. Mm-hmm. I got nothing for them. I want to beat them every chance I get in every sport. And their fans think, you know, they beat us last year. And then with the national title game, they think the sun is never going to set on them again. So, we beat them in our stadium last year. We beat the crap out of them last year and embarrassed them and embarrassed Kirby. And they're going to be coming for us on Saturday. So we got to be ready to play. But also, like, we just need to remember, like, you know, these are our rivals too. And, a lot of Auburn fans that were like us that lived in Georgia, you know, we heard it from the Georgia fans all the time. So we need to do everything we can to beat them on Saturday.
I was just thinking how amazing of a swing it was last year that we put 40 on them in the first game and 7 in the second. And that's really how much difference it made not having a reliable running attack in the second game. It was a 33-point swing. I mean, they did some things on defense, obviously, and that's, you know, you're going to learn a few things after you play somebody the first time. But we really were hurting the second time around. It's really unfortunate that we couldn't have been at full strength when we played them the second time.
Yep.
And even then, that game was a one-score game into the fourth quarter. People seem to forget that, you know.
That's right.
People act like they just blew us out last year. We blew them out last year, and then they squeaked one out at the end and got a garbage time score or two on us.
That's right. But I would also say again that, like, you know, nobody had to do what Auburn had to do last year.
Right.
We played Georgia and Alabama and Georgia back to back. And those teams, it was like playing, you know, again, a learning computer.
Yeah.
Those teams learned our team, learned our players, learned our strengths and weaknesses, learned our offense and what we like to do, you know, tendencies and all that kind of stuff. Even though we changed it up, you know, you're getting 3 games in a row against the best defensive coaching staffs in this country, and they were going to be, I don't care who you are, that by the time you play in the third time, they're going to know some stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And they did. And I mean, and then you take away take Kerryon out of the game, and we didn't have a whole lot left to offer them.
The SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Yes,
exactly. So what is Georgia this year? I mean, at the beginning, I thought they were about as good as Alabama, but I'm starting to think Alabama's considerably better than them. And they're good in some ways, but they're not a perfect team, are they? I mean, on occasion they can turn it on like the way they put down Kentucky. But on the other hand, this is a team that got kicked pretty solidly by LSU.
Yep. They're very good. They're very talented. They're a lot younger than they were last year at a lot of positions, and that means they're more inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of their starters, a lot of their best players are like sophomores, redshirt freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the veteran guys that were there last year that gave them steadiness are gone.
Mm-hmm.
They had the 2 big running backs last year that made their offense more of a pound kind of thing. And remember, they didn't let Fromm throw 10 passes in a lot of those games last year.
That's right.
And so they've loosened him up a little bit. They're still primarily a running team. So they try not to put too much on him. When they got their rear end kicked at LSU, LSU stopped the run and then got some, you know, had good coverage and got some pressure from, and he was really rattled. And because they had been rotating in Justin Fields a lot, Fromm was getting, you know, looking over the sideline, like, am I going to be replaced now? Every play, every incomplete pass, every bad play, he was looking at the sideline, like, is this it? Are they giving me the hook? Mm-hmm. And after that game, I think they had a kind of a regrouping, and they said, you're our guy. We're going to play you. You're the starting quarterback. Don't look over your shoulder. And he played a lot better against Florida. That was really his best game, I thought. And then they went to Kentucky. Kentucky is really good. They're really good on defense, but they're very limited offensively. They're limited at what they can do. But even then, Georgia went in and said, we're going to stop Kentucky from running the ball. And they did. And Kentucky threw the ball more than they have almost in any game, but it didn't matter.
Right, right. That was how they ended up beating Missouri at the end without Snell, was they were throwing the ball, but against Missouri is a little different than against Georgia. And they hung around with Georgia. I mean, they were always within about a score until the last few minutes of the game.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
I mean, again, what you said at the beginning is right. Like, we're going to save talking about Alabama for another week. Like, they're on a different level than I think Georgia is. You know, really, really good. I don't think they're quite as good as they were last year. Right. I think they're very talented, but I don't think they're as good a football team as they were last year. I think they're there's a kind of a tier of SEC teams that's like, you know, Georgia, LSU, Florida, Auburn, A&M, Mississippi State are kind of all in this tier. I think they're all kind of in a big group together.
Yeah.
And Georgia's probably the best team out of that group. But again, if they played at Starkville tomorrow, would they win? I don't know. So.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm just thinking about that, huh? I mean, Georgia's like the one team in the SEC that I'd kind of like to see them in a round robin against everybody, because they sure wouldn't go undefeated. They wouldn't even they would lose at least two, right? Because, you know, Alabama would probably beat them, and they lose to at least one other team. I'm not sure, and well, LSU. In fact, they probably lose to a third team if they had to play everybody once. But that being said, I mean, the way that this season is stacking up, that's pretty much second, because honestly, I've never thought LSU was a top four team. I know they got up as high as like three or four. I mean, were you like me when you saw LSU up in the top four right before they played Alabama? Are you thinking, that balloon's about to pop?
Sure. I mean, they weren't that good, but
we should have beaten
them. They beat who they beat. Yes, we should have beaten them. We blew that game. We outplayed. Let's be clear. We outplayed them, and they, you know, lucked out and escaped that game with a win.
And I mean,
that's what happened
after beating Washington. If we had beaten them too, for all the many faults with this Auburn team that's barely going to be above a 500 team, we still should have beaten two teams that at some point this year were in the top four in the playoff rankings.
Sure.
That's amazing. Just think about that. How many teams can say that? How many teams can say, "Oh, we're probably going to end up 7-5 and hope we go to a halfway decent bowl," and yet we beat a team that was in the top four, and we came within one play of beating another team that was in the top four. And we still got two more that we're going to play.
Yeah. This is a game that Auburn can win this weekend. We really can. I mean, I watched Georgia against Florida. I watched them against Kentucky. I watched some other game. I watched South Carolina.
LSU, yeah.
Yeah, Auburn can beat this Georgia team. I think there's a couple of things we got to do. The first one is the first two or three, 4 minutes of the game are crucial.
Yes.
Georgia likes to come out going 100 miles an hour and make a big play at the beginning of the game to get an edge. In all of their games, they do this. They come out and make a big play against South Carolina. They had an interception, Bentley, at the beginning of that game and turned it around and immediately scored against Kentucky. They had a big punt return. This is something they do in these games. They really come out and try and press the other team on both sides of the ball in the first few minutes to get, you know, a big play at an edge and to kind of set the tone. Mm-hmm. And so Auburn has to be ready for that. We cannot come out, you know, timid and halfway. We have to come out ready to play toe-to-toe with them full speed from the opening gun. If we do that, if we get through those first few minutes without allowing them a huge play, without, you know, being in a hole, then I think we can settle down and play with them. I think, you know, we're not a great offensive team, you know.
Newsflash, breaking news. Yeah. We break the news here.
Please clap.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
But we have really good receivers. We do, and we have a decent quarterback. I think we can go in there and throw the ball on them. Yes. I think we have to not be pigheaded and stubborn and try and line up and run the ball 40 times. And maybe Whitlow's a little bit healthier. But I think we can go in there and move the ball on them and score some points. And I think our defense is going to be ready to play. I think, you know, we know that we can stop the run. DeAndre Swift is really good. Holyfield's good. Swift was great in that Kentucky game.
Yes, he was.
But I think if we, you know, slow down their run a little bit, just like we did last year, we held them to like whatever 40 yards rushing last year, the same team with two better running backs. You know, we hold down the yards and make Fromm beat us. If he can do it? Sure. But then we're making him do it. But the other thing is, I think, you know, we're on the road. We're against a really good team. We're limited offensively. I think this is a game, even if we're playing well and stopping the run, Auburn may need to take some chances in this game, or at least one chance. You know, maybe break out a fake punt or an onside kick or something at some point. And it may be a thing where we do that earlier in the game to try and, you know, take their crowd out of the game, get a score early, and kind of keep them off balance a little bit.
So I got a question for you along those lines. At the beginning of the Texas A&M game in the first quarter on all Auburn possessions in that game, not counting punts, just plays where we're trying to gain yards, okay? So first down, second down, third down. How many of those plays did we run before we gave the ball to a running back on like a regular run play?
I don't know, five?
It was the seventh play of the game, which was on the second possession. We went... Okay, because I noticed we were going wide. Here's the sequence of our offensive plays that were not punts, okay? Schwartz ran for a loss on the sweep. Schwartz ran for a loss on the sweep. Stidham passed to Ryan Davis for 4 yards, and we punted. Second possession, Stidham was sacked. Stidham passed to Darius Slayton for 9 yards. Stidham passed to Malik Miller. And then on the seventh play, Malik Miller ran for no gain. Then on the next play, Stidham ran for no gain. Then on the next, that's number eight. Play number nine, Stidham passed to Darius Slayton. Then we punted. That's number nine. And then on the next drive, we threw one pass for a touchdown. That was it, the whole drive after the turnover. Then on the next drive, Stidham ran. And then you get Sean Shivers for 3 yards on 2nd and 7. So by the time you are at the 13:02 mark of the second quarter, Auburn has run the ball with a running back twice.
Mm.
So we wonder how we got 19 yards. It wasn't just that we weren't getting many. We weren't even trying. All right, the next drive, Stidham pass incomplete. It's not until the 10-minute and 12-second mark of the second quarter that Whitlow gets the ball and runs for 3 yards. Then Stidham incomplete, and we punt again. I'm coming up on halftime, and then Whitlow gets a couple of runs. So it wasn't until late in the second quarter, really, mid-second quarter, that Whitlow even came in and tried. And that just kind of blows my mind. So... I'm not sure what to take from that as we look at Georgia, other than it seemed like the coaches didn't want to come out and run. They did try to come out and do some creative things. The things weren't really working at first. But do you think we're going to come out and try to establish any kind of run against Georgia, or are we just going to come out and fun and gun it?
I think we ought to come out and fun and gun it, but I don't think that's what we'll do. Here's two of the things about Georgia. In terms of their defense, the thing that makes it encouraging to try for the passing the ball more is Georgia is last in the SEC in sacks and tackles for loss.
Wow.
That's so their defense is good, and they're good tacklers and well coached, but they don't have a lot of those big time pass rushers they've had in the past.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, so that's good for Stidham. Like, it's good for our passing game. I think that's if they can't get pressure on him, then I think that's a good thing. And the last thing I want to say about Georgia is we have to cover that stupid tight end Nauta because it's coming. You can see it coming. Today's Monday, okay? You can see it coming from now.
Yep.
We need to cover that guy because they're going to use him against us.
When he walks into the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's gonna be all over us. We've got to – yeah, you're right. Oh, man. He's another one of those players that's just given us fits for years. It's like every team has that one guy. It used to be Arkansas that had that one guy. Now it's Georgia and A&M. Oh, boy. All right, so cover Isaac Nauta. Let me see. I'm going to click this button here because I got to thank our patrons. We've been getting a lot of really good feedback because people have been listening to We Believed, the first episode of our mini-series about the history of Auburn football, and about basically the history of Auburn football fans, what it's been like to be a fan from the end of the Shug Jordan through Barfield and Dye. That's how far we got in the first episode, into the beginning of the Dye years. And we just have a lot of interviews. I have Jeremy Johnson on there, and I've got Jerry Hennon, got Reynolds Wolf, I got John, I've got just a bunch of people on there talking about what it's like to be an Auburn fan over these years. And our next episode coming up pretty soon, we'll be looking at the early Pat Dye era, and that should be a lot of fun. I have clips from the games and interviews and stuff like that. Right now, that's available on patreon.com if you are one of our supporters. So hook up, and you can, for as little as $1 a month, you can get that. We also, of course, have John's Power Poll, which we'll be getting to in a minute. Lately, our patrons have gotten free books. I offered a bunch of books I had left over from conventions, including several copies of Decades of Dominance, and they got those. And you get to hear stuff like We Believed Early. I even have done some other things as well. So for as little as $1 a month, you can help us to stay on the air, and you get all kind of rewards like that. Let me quickly thank the folks who are doing that for us. There's Brendan O'Dwyer. And then, excuse me, let's get the reading music. Bum, bum. Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, and Brandon Sisson, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Vic Zijicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Ronald McCullum, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, almost done, I promise, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, our one-time donors, including Surfer Chickify and others and anonymous donors. We thank you, thank you, thank you. All you got to do to join the fun, join the crowd, is go to www.auwishbone.com, and there's a banner there that says Become a Patron. That's all you got to do. And now, if I find where I am exactly, we've got this week's superhero feature from Jared. Jared Albrick, one of our contributors here at White Rocket Entertainment on the Bond podcast mainly, and also on the White Rocket Show, and occasionally on here. And Jared has this week's superhero battle based on Auburn and Texas A&M. And here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
Hello, Van and John and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade with your Auburn University superhero battles. This week, Auburn is my favoritest of superheroes, Batman the Dark Knight, and Texas A&M came in there like Bane, all amped up on some venom juice. Bane came in strong, powerful, relentless, and for a moment there, it looked like he'd broken the Batman's back. But Auburn did that Batman thing that I love so well, just kept fighting. Bloodied, battered, not in the greatest state they've ever been, but with no quit in their hearts, kept on fighting and won the day, and I couldn't be prouder. So hats off, Auburn University Batman, and hats off to the Auburn family, War Eagle, to John, Van, and of course Pat Sampson, who does all these edits for us, and of course the Eagle that we have here in studio. Sing it out, Eagle.
I love the Eagle. I love the Eagle almost as much as Jared. Okay, maybe more. Thanks, Jared. It's always cool. Jared puts those together with Pat, and they do a great job on that, and I'm glad that they put the time into that. It's awesome. And now, I minimized something. Now, I have to push this.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
Ah, what happened? Oh, wait, maybe I pushed this button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
There it is.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
I need to delete that other one. Didn't realize I had it. All right, what do we got?
Yeah, I was going to say we did a little soundboard practice there, man.
Yeah, that's not good.
All right, first question is from Brad Isbell, who says that he contacted us at auwishbone@gmail.com. And he says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to the podcast since last season. I got to say, it's hands down my favorite podcast."
Oh, cool.
"Can you guys give me your opinion on Hugh Freeze coming to Auburn as offensive coordinator? I feel like Stidham and Lindsey will both be gone this year, so it could be likely. I thought Gus showed his ego wasn't too swollen to hire a big name when he hired Muschamp, so I don't doubt he would make this move. Thanks and keep up the great work. Brad."
Oh, for a muse of fire.
I'm trying to imagine. It's almost Shakespearean. I know that Feinbaum said that, which means it can't possibly be true. Didn't Alabama try to hire him as one of their 57,000 consultants, and the SEC said you can't? So there had to be some kind of a change in the home office between now and then. There's several things that have to come together for you to believe that. One is that the SEC would let us hire him. Two is that we would want to, and with Gus, that's obviously much more likely than with a lot. Three is that he'd want to be offensive coordinator under Gus for a couple of reasons. One, he was a very successful head coach at a rival program. I'm not sure he'd want to do like Muschamp did and come in and subordinate himself to Gus. I don't think Muschamp was ever very happy in that role, honestly. And then also, that we would want a guy who's going to come in for like a year and change everything and then leave probably as soon as he's done his rehabilitation, goes off somewhere else. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure there's a lot of market for Hugh Freeze. And now the reason that Alabama couldn't hire him right away is because let's step back and talk about what, you know, Hugh Freeze, the good and the bad, right?
Okay.
He was the head coach at Ole Miss. He was a really good offensive coach. They scored a lot of points. They had creative offense. He lost his job during the NCAA investigation. He and his staff basically blamed a lot of their problems on Houston Nutt, the previous coach. They said, "Oh, it was all his doing," and it wasn't. It was Hugh Freeze and his staff. But when they said that in public, that was their public excuse. It gave Houston Nutt reason to sue the university, and he did, and he sued and got all of, as part of the discovery process, he got all Hugh Freeze's cell phone records, and for his university paid cell phone, and Houston Nutt's lawyers went through them, and they found calls to an escort service, basically, in Florida, and turned it over to the university as part of their, and said, hey, maybe you should look into this. And the university went back and found a bunch more of those kind of phone calls. And that Hugh Freeze was on recruiting trips to different parts of the South. And that combined with the hammer of NCAA sanctions coming down, and it was obvious at that point they were tying the things to Hugh Freeze and his staff, led to him being fired. And the other part of that is that Hugh Freeze is a, self-professed strong Christian man, and he came across as incredibly hypocritical when these calls to the escort service came out, that he was doing this kind of stuff on road trips while professing to be holier than thou the rest of the time. So I think but the piece of the NCAA sanctions was he had a show cause for 1 year against him, which means he could, in the same way that Bruce Pearl did before he came to Auburn, during this past year, Hugh Freeze could not work on a coaching staff and recruit or be around recruits at all. And so that is what, during that time period, that's why Alabama was asking the SEC about hiring him, because it would have, the NCAA was still fighting with Ole Miss about the penalties and the sanctions were fresh at that point. And they've since sued and got some of them removed, but not the show cause is wearing off at this point. Mm-hmm. So Freeze can go work on a staff. He's currently the offensive coordinator, in some minor pro league that I have never heard of in Arizona, like the AAFL or something. The idea that if Gus called, he wouldn't come, I don't believe that for a minute. I think he would come in a second.
Okay.
Can he do the job, and would he be a good offensive coordinator? Sure. Would I want to hire him? No. I mean, I don't have a lot of respect for him after the hypocrite thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I think when you hire somebody who the NCAA has caught and busted, you are basically giving ammunition to the NCAA and your rival schools to point at you and say they're cheating. They brought in the cheater to help them cheat better.
Would you rather have him or Bobby Petrino on your staff?
Neither. Good gosh. Well, Bobby Petrino, I'm going to say this. Bobby Petrino is done, and we have a question about him next, but he's getting ready to get fired.
All right.
We're not ever going to hire this person, okay? But stupid Art Briles' son is offensive coordinator at Houston, and they're scoring a gazillion points a game. But I think that, he and Hugh Freeze are not the only good offensive coaches in the world. I think there are plenty of good offensive coordinators out there, really good offensive coordinators. And if Chip leaves through his choice or not after this season, and we want to go get another offensive coordinator, we can get one. It doesn't matter who it is or how good they are. The question is, will they be allowed some level of autonomy to run their offense? And this is the real question. Would a good offensive coordinator who had a good offensive system want to come to Auburn where they might not be allowed to run their offense?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, so that's my feeling on Hugh Freeze. How would you vote if they asked you tomorrow?
I'm very 50-50 on him right now. I'm kind of ashamed of that fact, but I do know that he could get the passing game going if he's allowed to. But you're exactly right. As long as Gus Malzahn is our coach, that predicates everything else. I mean, we could have God Almighty as our offensive coordinator, but if Gus is like, I'm sorry, Lord, but you can't call the plays, then what difference does it make?
Yeah, no, we could hire whoever, Lincoln Riley could be the offensive coordinator, but if Gus doesn't let him design and run the offense, it doesn't matter.
What's
so
the point, right?
That's my thing. But also, I'm going to be like, I get the appeal of Hugh Freeze. I really do. I'm not Alabama. There are limits to what I will do to win. And I think we can win perfectly fine without Hugh Freeze. I will come up with a list of alternative offensive coordinators when we get to that point. Right, here's our next question from Wes Atkinson.
Yep.
It's about the very person you mentioned. He says, "Hey, guys, some of my friends defected to a very vocal group I'm calling the Cult of Petrino.
Oh, God.
They haven't been happy since 2007 and claim that any warm body would be better than Gus from the moment we hired him. I really think the yardstick they're measuring against is the Saban era at Alabama. First, given the current coaching market, is there a warm body that would be better than Gus, I think? And second, and you may have answered this for Reynolds, Stans, and Hurricanes Wolf two shows ago, unless we have a catastrophic season, is it even worth making a move until Saban retires? Love the show, and War Damn Eagle."
And we appreciate you, Wes.
Well, and he says, "I fail at Twitter, and I'm not sure if you got the reply, but he says, Van, I'm in on F1 Fantasy Group for next season."
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, I'll make a note. Yeah, by the way, that's something I fail to mention enough on here, because I know there's a few Formula One fans besides me. We do have a Fantasy Formula One League. There's two races left in this season. So if you jump on, and all of our patrons are eligible to come on board and have a team, set up your own team, it's awesome. It's really fun. And if you want to go ahead and jump in and get a little practice on our last two races, see now, then you'll be all set coming the, you know, March when it rolls around again real soon to have a whole new season, and that'll be great. We've made it our position on Petrino very clear over the years. But I understand what he's saying in terms of, you know, there's some people that just wanted Petrino, and they basically just wanted anybody but Gus. And we talked about that a little bit already. And so who would you, you know, how would you answer that? I feel like we've answered that in different ways before, and I want to make sure we thoroughly answer it this time.
Sure. I mean, I think the question he's asking, if tomorrow Auburn decided to fire Gus, who could we get? And I think the some of the people that are making this argument are delusional about the candidates that they have. Right. They think Auburn could get. And I'm not saying I understand what the different people's ties to universities are, contract obligations, that kind of stuff. So I'm only going to give you names that I think are realistic and would be good candidates. I mean, I don't know anything about the guy at UAB, Bill Clark. But apparently they're great, and they're great at defense this year, and you're going to hear his name for other jobs.
Yep.
I've told you before, the guy at Troy, Neil Brown, is probably going to get a bigger job this year, and the guy at Appalachian State, Scott Satterfield, is going to get a bigger job. On the coordinator side, I mean, you know, Dave Aranda or the guy at Clemson, but – there's no offensive-minded assistant out there that I think is great. I think, again, the guy – I said this a couple weeks ago. I really like Jeff Brohm at Purdue, but I think that in very short amount of time, Louisville is going to fire Bobby Petrino and pay him to go away, pay him a lot of money to go away, and they're going to hire Jeff Brohm. Because he's from Louisville, he played there, his family played there. He's going to go home and be the Louisville coach for the next 15 years or whatever.
Yep.
But that's a guy I would go try to get. I think he's, again, I think he has a lot of the Bobby Petrino offensive skill without being an icky person.
That's a good way to put it.
I really like Matt Campbell at Iowa State. I think he's a really, really good coach. It's weird that we would go try to hire another Iowa State coach.
Oh, good gosh. Well, we can do a whole show in the off season on coaches we would hire if we didn't have Gus, but I think the
point of that is, you know, some people's expectations are unrealistic.
Yes, then that's always the case. That's how it's always been.
But I think some of these people are looking around going, we could get Dabo. You know, that's not going to happen.
I have to say, though, I do wish that Gus's career track had been the way Dabo's has been. I was yelling about this the other day. I was ranting to my wife about this last weekend when Clemson was hanging 70 on somebody again. I'm like, you know, I said, it's just not fair that Dabo freaking Swinney, who was like an assistant recruiting coach on Stallings' staff at Alabama when he was like 12, and then went to be like a receivers coach on Tommy Bowden's Clemson staff that was terrible, somehow basically became like the interim coach at Clemson, and then just tripped into having this juggernaut of a team that is the only team in the country that can consistently challenge Alabama every year. And yet, it should be us. Us with Gus should have had what Clemson had the last several years. To be fair, they've beaten Alabama, what, once? And won one national championship. We've beaten Alabama in that same era twice and won one national championship. They've lost a national championship. We've lost a national championship. So they have won about the same amount and lost about the same amount of big games that we have, the biggest games. The difference is they have been consistently right up there in the playoffs every year while we keep riding the dang Auburn roller coaster. I just feel like our highs have been about the same as Clemson's the last decade. It's just that they've consistently stayed up on the top of the hill and had those occasional highs. We have those occasional highs, and then we hit the freaking bottom for a year or two. And I just don't understand it, John. I don't understand it.
I would say two things. One is they play in the ACC.
Yeah.
And I think in particular like this year, I think the ACC took a gigantic step back. And I think other than Clemson, that league is not very good. And I think, I mean, really, like the next best team in the ACC is probably, honestly, it's probably Boston College who they're going to play this weekend. NC State, Boston College.
With our old friend.
Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do, but also you got to give them credit. Like they weathered, you know, losing a really good offensive coach who's now the head coach at Arkansas, and they've hired good replacements, but they've done a really good job of stability, recruiting, developing players over the long term. You have to give them credit for that.
Oh, I give them credit. It just makes me mad. I don't want to give them credit. I am grudgingly, but I just don't want to.
Sure.
All right. Let's move things along here. What else are our questions we have?
All right. Next question is from Mr. Knoll, who says, I'm just going to say what we're all thinking. Let's get Stidham a matchup against Texas in a bowl game. He loves sticking it to guys from his home state.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I love it.
He says, P.S., I'm still on the pro-Gus side. Eventually we'll have a top-tier team that'll make a run. Well, this year's team has been a disappointment. There's still been consistent excitement around this program when he's been our coach.
Yeah. Never better recruiting. I mean, you got to be honest. Never in our history better recruiting.
Josh Corbett asked what you asked. Does Gus get out of the way and stop being stubborn or running the ball and play the entire UGA game the way we played the last two drives against Texas A&M?
I don't know. I think he's going to want to come out. We're gonna come out and establish a run. We're a run first, power run, downhill run, and play action team. We're gonna establish a run first. But I don't think we are. I'm sorry. I just don't think we are. So we'll see. I mean, it would help if we had a healthy booby. But
our next question fits into that, as AU Tweet points out, we're once again heading into the Georgia game with a banged-up backfield situation.
While they're perfectly back to strength, pretty much, yeah. So, yep.
All right, Tom Anderson says, guys, a comeback. Holy cow, when was the last time we came back with multiple scores in the fourth quarter? We didn't play well all day until late, but, man, it felt great to win like that.
Absolutely. And it was an old timey win with modern technology.
He says, by the way, is it really hard for defensive linemen to line up onside? I was about to lose my mind. And he says, where is Asa Martin?
Yeah, that's the APB. Put out the APB on Asa Martin. Didn't make an appearance as far as I could tell. I don't even understand.
He did not play.
I don't understand it.
Our next question comes from Joey Miller, who's the subject of his email is Air Raid AU.
There it is.
And he says, hi, John Van. Saturday is a great lesson on not giving up when there's still time to make plays.
Absolutely.
I attended the game and was very surprised to see some folks leaving with 8 minutes left and still time to win. I give a lot of credit to the team for not giving in and fighting hard. Is there any chance this late for the running game to show signs of life? or is the AU offense who they were against Texas A&M? Watching the last two drives, it looked like Van is correct that Auburn should just run their two-minute offense the entire game and channel their inner Mike Leach. Do you think this gives us our best chance against Georgia and Alabama? Thanks for the great work. I appreciate it very much, Joey Miller.
We appreciate you, Joey. Pete, fans leaving early.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
Amen. That's all it is. You got with Auburn, you got to stay. You can't leave. Again, unless it's the Georgia game in 2003. But other than that, 2003 and I have a special relationship that I won't go into right now. But yeah, it was such an old school win of coming back. You're back. Their backs to the wall, their feet to the fire. It's good stuff.
I think we should come out and run the 2 minute offense the whole game. I think trying to substitute and and adjust plays at the line and run guys on and off every time because we're trying to like manufacture offense. I think it's not working. I think Stidham plays better when the team is going fast. I think we play better when things are going fast. Don't let the defense substitute. Let's take it to them and manipulate them instead of letting them get set the way they want to when we substitute every time. I think, I remember, again, we didn't win the game, but you remember at the end of the Tennessee game, the same thing happened. We were rolling up and down the field throwing the ball the last couple of drives of that game.
Yep.
And it was too late. And, when we had some drops and stuff, but it was the same kind of thing. And I just think, it's there. There's a whole conference, the Big 12. This is all they do all the time. It's possible to do this. our next question comes from his Twitter handle is AuburnDad27. He says, it's Kenneth Brent Rains. He says, can Auburn at least ask the SEC office to please provide good refs for Georgia and Alabama?
That's too much to ask for. No, we can't ask that. What are you kidding? That's far too much to ask for.
Theodore Roosevelt says, should we stop giving players the number 9? Because whenever they do, they seem to not pan out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. 18 seems to work out pretty well. I don't know.
It does. So, and he says we got to get ready to compete, for all four quarters of Georgia.
Yes, I don't know if we will. I think we'll. You can't do the one quarter of one quarter bit again this week and hope that it's going to work out. I don't think.
That's exactly right. That's it.
What are we going to do?
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
All right, let's make it quick here. We know that Georgia beat Kentucky. We talked about that. Somebody was talking about how it was daylight savings time this past weekend. They said this is the time of year every year where we're provided an entire hour that we can just sleep late, and that's called the fourth quarter of Alabama LSU. That's pretty good.
That's the truth.
The South Carolina Ole Miss track meet, I see. The basketball teams were having a preseason game, an early SEC matchup between South Carolina 48, Ole Miss 44. That's a fairly low-scoring basketball game. They must not have shot many three-pointers in that game. let's see. Missouri beat Florida. Missouri beat Florida 34-17.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I don't know. I do not know.
I think Missouri is obvious after this. I think Missouri is clearly the third best team in the East. It's Georgia, Kentucky, Missouri. And again, Kentucky beat Missouri on that fluke pass interference at the end of the game, the kind of miracle comeback. Right. Or we ought to be talking about Missouri is the second best team in the East.
Good gosh. If Missouri is the second best team in your division, you should just quit football. Tennessee, it's not that Tennessee beat Charlotte 14-3. It's that Tennessee beat Charlotte 14-3. This is a team that scored 30 in Auburn and beat something called Charlotte 14-3. I don't even. Mississippi State beat La Tech. Nobody cares. All right. Here's what we want to get to. Next week's games coming up. South Carolina at Florida. Remember when this was fun? When this was a fun game? When it was like Spurrier at South Carolina coming back home to play
this
the Gators?
This is Muschamp coming home.
Oh, that's right. It's so weird how that goes. Yeah, they have a weird incestuous relationship between South Carolina and Florida. How do you see that coming out? Very quickly.
Yeah, I think Florida's better. You know, yeah. South Carolina likes to muck it up and bring you down to their level kind of.
Carolina has a Muschamp's chance in that game.
Yes.
A Muschamp's chance. Vanderbilt at Missouri, the answer is nobody cares. Ole Miss, hold on. Oh, crap. Oh, come on. I don't want this. No. The coach is not coming in. The coach is not walking through
Larry
that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And Coach Snyder's not walking through that door. Here it is. Ole Miss at Texas A&M. I'm going to do it. I'm pulling the trigger.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
I saw what Texas A&M's pass defense looks like. Texas A&M can stop the run. It doesn't matter. Ole Miss doesn't run. A&M is good at doing something. A&M is good at stopping something. Ole Miss doesn't even try. So Ole Miss is going to throw the ball. Like, three of the top five receivers in the SEC right now are Ole Miss receivers. I'm picking Ole Miss over Texas A&M as my lock of the week. What do you think?
This will be a weird game because A&M will run the ball and control the clock, and Ole Miss will have the ball for like 10 minutes but score 35 points.
Absolutely, and Ole Miss is going to win. Kentucky at Tennessee. Kentucky, don't let Georgia beat you twice, I think, is all I can really say there.
Exactly.
Get this season in the – take care of it. Wrap it up. It's not quite what you dreamed of, but it's still way better than you're used to, and basketball season's about to start. Mississippi State at Alabama, you know I got to pull the trigger not just once.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
But twice.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
My double barrel lock, because you know the rules, John. Mississippi State does not beat Alabama. It just doesn't happen. So I don't care any extenuating circumstances. Alabama is going to beat them. Mississippi State may keep it close for a couple of quarters, but the evil, great Satan will get it done.
I think it's a lot like the LSU game. Mississippi State's defense will play well against Alabama's offense, but it won't matter because Mississippi State's offense will do nothing.
Exactly. And finally, LSU at Arkansas. If LSU... don't let Alabama beat you twice. This is the don't let them beat you twice week. And LSU, you should take care of business against the Pigs. Don't let Alabama get you down and beat you twice.
You could see 100% you could see LSU losing this game after that.
God. Oh, no. No, I just can't imagine. I don't want to live in that world, I don't think. It would be neat. I'm certainly going to cheer for Arkansas, but my goodness, LSU. All right, I think that's it. Any final thoughts?
Let's go back to 1 second of what we said at the beginning. Enjoy football.
Yes.
You know, cheer hard for Auburn this weekend.
Yes.
And, you know, Georgia sucks. Let's go kick their ass.
Georgia sucks. That's right. Go back and read our Past is Prologue and Prologue to a Championship from Season of Our Dreams book, and think about all the good times. And then, of course, I'll wrap up by saying, once this little game against Georgia is over, it officially becomes
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
I can't wait. It's almost Liberty Hate Week. All right, and that means that D Ford will be over across the pond for that game.
That's exciting.
That'd be cool. All right. I think our time is up, and I think we thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
Bring it, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
becomes of you, my love. When they have finally stripped you off, the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.
Now get up.